Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
It's a good question from your boy Scott Van Pelt last night with Woj. Woj is going to join us in 30 minutes. That's a very intriguing question. What happens to James Harden? Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. You're watching us this morning on TV. South Street Seaport, the boats docked, ready to go. We're locked and loaded for the next couple of hours. Here's another question I want to get to right out of the gate. The Harden question eventually will be answered that Scott posed to Woj, who again will be here in 30 minutes or so, even less than that. But Jay, right out of the gate, LeBron signing a two-year $85 million deal, largest two-year deal in NBA history just moments ago. Woj breaking that Anthony Davis is back on a deal that's 5 years, $190. We'll break it down with him in just a little bit. You put those two together. You said their offseason moves from general manager Rob Pelinka have made them exponentially better, and it's hard to argue. So the real question is, after all that money has been spent and all those moves have been made, who can catch him?
I don't think anybody can catch him this year, not in the West. I think the teams that have the best shot to catch him actually are coming from the East, and that could be – you know, Brooklyn could be one of those teams. Obviously, you know, you think about the Celtics are part of that situation, the Bucks if they're there. But, I mean, Portland is in a good position to do so because of what they've been able to do in offseason, in free agency. It's going to be interesting to see, like, who continues to ascend in the East. Like, as Key alluded to before, Golden State losing Klay Thompson, that hurts them. Now, adding Kelly Oubre and company, what they've been able to do. Andrew Wiggins needs to step up. They still have a legit core, but it's not the same style. When you look through it all, it's going to be hard for any team to catch the Lakers, guys. Just be real about it. Mm-hmm. They are loaded.
Even with Klay there and healthy, it was going to be hard. You know, it would be hard. It was going to be hard. It was going to be hard for Golden State. It's hard for Denver, Dallas. I can go on and on. I can list the entire West if I wanted to. The Lakers are at the top of the mountain. And I think a lot of people know that in the West, and they see that in the West. And they continue, because think about it. They got younger. There's no more JaVale McGee's and Dwight Howard's, older players. They're younger at the point guard position. I know Jay Will alluded to LeBron James saying that you know, he's deferring the point guard position. Now, he's going to obviously handle the ball when he needs to handle the ball, but when you're still getting younger and guys can run up and down the floor and play minutes without being tired and having to come out or check out or being banged up or bruised and things like that, that helps your team significantly. Sometimes, like, for instance, the Clippers, they lost coaches off the staff. The Lakers didn't lose coaches. None of their coaches are still there. It's the same. They're repeating the same thing with better players.
I mean, look, the reason why I said Portland, Portland gets Robert Covington, guy that can shoot the ball. You combine him with Dame and CJ. It's a really good backcourt. That's unique, right? They always had to side with Yusuf Nurkic. Zach Collins got hurt last year. He was averaging big-time money, big-time points per game, inside and out. Can knock down a mid-range jump shot. So I think now you get Enes Kanter comes back, gives him sides to kind of combat that size that the Lakers have to a degree.
Resurgence of Melo.
Yep, Melo played extremely well. He just signed another deal there as well. I mean, but look at the rest of the teams. When you think about, let's just go to the Western Conference. I mean, the Clippers didn't really make any moves in free agency. We'll get into later about what Paul George said about Doc Rivers and the scheme that they were running offensively. Okay, Denver Nuggets, they'll be there. But still, people are wondering about, you know, can Jamal Murray sustain that type of play the whole year? He did it in the bubble. They looked incredible in the bubble. But can he do it the whole year? Houston Rockets, they got John Wall, but that's still they still have a
Rudy
lot of questions.
Cousins, John Wall,
okay,
and a potential exit for Harden. We've seen Westbrook.
Okay, see,
already.
It's rebuilding. I mean, they have draft picks out the yin yang. Their Utah will be there. Dallas will be there. Phoenix will be there. Okay, it's the Lakers. Portland's kind of there. Because I like what they've done, and everybody else is kind of like right there beneath them. It's the Lakers to lose this year, guys. Let's be real about it. It's the Lakers to lose when it's all said and done this year.
You mentioned the Clippers, and I just want to kind of pay off what you had said for viewers and listeners that didn't get the gist of this from Paul George. You kind of mentioned he was a little bitter after their playoff loss when they were up 3-1 to Denver. He was on the All the Smoke podcast and essentially said of Doc Rivers, now obviously we know Ty Lue is there. Jay, you mentioned this, quote, "This is all Paul George. We lost, but during that whole process, we never worked on adjustments. We never worked on what to do differently. We just literally having the same blank happen over and over again. It started to play a trick on you like, man, what's going on?" So they run it back, obviously, with Paul, with Kawhi, with a coach that I think a lot of people would have loved to have hired this offseason. I know you said they made no moves, but considering Key has always said, and you've said even just weeks ago, before the Lakers made all the moves, you still would like to see the Lakers run through somebody like the Clippers with the way that they have ascended. Where do you see LA right now within hearing these particular comments, knowing the guy that was in charge of these, the lack of adjustments, he's out?
Well, I mean, we talked about that. He remember when we were going through this whole thing about the Clippers, and I was like, man, this feels like a coup. It feels like somebody internally just didn't want Doc Rivers to be there, right? We were wondering, you know, look, whenever a guy like Doc Rivers is removed from a team, regardless if they didn't meet expectations, that's coming from the best players to a degree, right? I mean, Steve Ballmer can say, hey, I want to fire Doc Rivers, but at the end of the day, Steve Ballmer has to consult, not that he has to consult, that's the wrong choice of word, he has to communicate that to Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, if those guys are your best players and they own the keys to your franchise. That's why I said, you know, it's because of them that he's no longer there too. And Paul George is just kind of reiterating that by saying, hey, they're trying to use me like a Ray Allen. They're trying to use me like a J.J. Redick. Pin downs, coming off screens. His game is way more diverse than that. You can use him, you know, back against the basket, posting up in pick and roll scenarios because he can do it all. The question is, though, losing Montrezl Harrell really hurts him. And they just didn't add anything in free agency, and I think that hurts him ultimately.
Let me ask you this, Jason. Why say something now that Doc Rivers is gone?
Because he is gone.
Why not address it at the time it is happening with Doc Rivers at halftime and stuff like that? Why not, like, address it then?
That's why we were talking about this before, Key, where I was like, man, I wish a guy like CP3 was on this team.
Mm-hmm.
Because – and I don't know this for a fact. Maybe it was addressed. But Kawhi doesn't really talk a lot, right? That's never been his thing. He hasn't been as communicative. He's a quiet leader. What I've seen by Paul, you know, what he said in this whole thing is that, hey, you know, we were up 3-1. Then we lost. It was 3-2. And we're like, all right, we'll be fine. Then it was 3-3. We're like, all right, we'll be fine. We still won one game. And then, you know, all of a sudden, well, we need to make some changes. Somebody in the locker room needs to be like, no, Doc. We need to make changes. Somebody needs to stand up and say that. And I think ultimately their lack of leadership and nobody to address that with Doc is ultimately what led to their demise.
So when you're up 3-1 and a team runs off three straight victories to get you, in that entire stretch, you mean to tell me that the coaching staff, as well as Patrick Beverley, I'll just use him as an example, didn't address the lack of adjustments? Is that and I didn't play. I've never been in an NBA locker room as a player, so I don't know how that would go over. I know in an NFL locker room, if the adjustments aren't being made, we're certainly going to let the coaches know, like, yo, this dude is playing me this way. We need to go to this. This ain't working. What are y'all doing? And so it's hearing you or listening to Paul George talk about the lack of adjustments from a veteran coach who's won a championship and veteran players that are on teams and guys like Sam Cassell who's on the bench and Ty Lue who's there, just let that just go?
No, you're right. I mean, look, it's his word. Nobody else is really saying anything.
No, I'm not questioning his word. I'm just saying it's like – it's baffling and mind-boggling to a degree, right? You would think that – veteran players that have won championships, whether Kawhi doesn't – you don't need to scream loud to say, hey, Jay, man, we need to make some adjustments, dog.
Look, you bring up a valid point. I wasn't in the locker room. I don't know what happened. This is Paul George saying these words. I would find it shocking that a guy like Doc Rivers, Ty Lue –
that's
Sam Cassell wouldn't make those adjustments.
Yeah, or even be able to see why we are losing these games or why the first half is going one way or the third quarter is going one way and not be able to make the adjustments.
But there was a part of what Paul George said, though, that I got, because we all felt this way. And if we felt this way, I'm sure internally with inside the organization, they felt this way. You didn't think Denver was really going to beat the Clippers.
No, I didn't. Right?
Nobody thought that. You're like, all right, it's a matter of time before Kawhi turns it on. It's a matter of time before PG. Oh, Lou Will, he's dropping buckets on people. Montrez, it's a matter of time. So I think that was maybe also a part of the problem, that they never thought it could actually happen. They didn't have that sense of urgency. They didn't have that dog in them as much as they thought
but
they
when
did.
But when it gets to 3-2, it's uh-oh. I'm right? I mean, it should be.
You would think.
Yeah, it should be like a uh-oh. Like, wait a minute, man, this ain't right. You know, that's kind of in football, because you don't play a whole series, you get basically your series is your quarter. And you look up in your first and second quarter, you kicking butt. Your third quarter coming, somebody making a comeback. Now all of a sudden you go, yo, we need to change this in the fourth quarter.
All I'm going to say is every time Kawhi Leonard has won a championship, he's been the guy that got finals MVP multiple times, but he hasn't been the leader of the team. Like Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, leaders of the San Antonio Spurs.
That would be a good player, Tony Robinson.
Tony Robinson. Leader, he was a guy I actually competed against in high school. He went to UConn and I didn't. Anyway, funny how you remember things like that. T. Robinson, respect to you. But he wasn't the guy in San Antonio, right? Like, leadership-wise, that was Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan. Then you go to Toronto, like, that was Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry is the leader of that team. Fred VanVleet, tough guy as well. He made big shots. But, like, communicative-wise, leadership-wise, that was him. And now you come to the Clippers, like, who is that guy? Like, who was the guy grabbing people in the huddle saying, nah, you ain't going to do it this way?
So who's the leader now?
That's always been a question. That's why I thought they needed a guy like CP3. I still don't know who the leader of the Clippers
Is the voice scratch that.
Ty Lue.
Scratch that. Is the leader Ty Lue and the voice Ty Lue now?
It has to be. I mean, unless Paul George continues to step up and say, this is my team.
Yeah.
I don't know, understanding personality traits, who the leader is in the locker room. I see how Pat Bev talks to everybody, but I don't know. Does he lead them?
He annoys me. I like him.
Well, that's
what
I'm saying. Like, I know Dame leads the Portland Trailblazers. I know LeBron leads the Lakers. I know Jamal Murray and Jokic lead the Denver Nuggets. I don't know who leads the Los Angeles Clippers.
I would love to play with Patrick Beverley, just not against him, because he would make me mad.
Two quick things I would just mention, just from the fan perspective. I would never think it would be Paul George's team as long as Kawhi Leonard is on the roster. That's just from a fan perspective. And also, this is a Waterloo season for the Clippers. Remember, if this thing doesn't work out, it doesn't blow up, these guys can just walk out the door. And everything the Clippers did to acquire these two guys, it could be over at
the
end of next
season.
But
you say that because Kawhi Leonard's the best player.
Indeed.
Right? The best player always isn't the leader.
Fair enough.
But the top players, though, like LeBron is the leader. Dame is the leader. Like, certain other guys are the leader. I'm not sure. I think that's still a question mark about Kawhi.
Very fair.
Kawhi could join the Lakers, man. We ain't, you know, we'll take him.
Keys tampering. Keys tampering. Unbelievable. Sure. It's unbelievable. All right, so speaking of leaders, who is the leader in the clubhouse for our poll question this morning? You can answer in any way you want. Essentially, we're just asking you, fellas, what's the best running back wide receiver duo in football? Think about it. Normally, when we're talking about just one position group, it's a little easy to come up with an answer, whether it's the best defensive player in Aaron Donald, best offensive player in Patrick Mahomes. That's an easy one. But think about this one for a second. Best running back wide receiver running back duo in football right now, 888-SAY-ESPN, or hit us up on KeyJNZ on Twitter. What I'm going to do here, fellas, we're getting a tremendous amount of response. I'm just going to run through, and then Key, I'll just ask you for a quick strike reaction, and then Jay for the next one, because there's some really good ones coming in. RPEMS14 on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, both of them dangerous options, and keeps the defense guessing. And if Aaron Rodgers trusts them, then I'm good with that. Jay, what do you think about that?
That's what I said before. I mean, look, these guys are both so explosive, and you look at what Aaron Jones has been able to do, and same with Devontae Adams. I mean, they have to be at the top tier of this conversation.
They are in there. If those two guys are on the board, then I'm certainly not crying if I miss out on two other ones.
Indeed. At Carnage F Hive says, it's probably Cook and Thielen. As a Packers fan, this feels like heresy. I love to see Jones and Adams, but Jones splits too many carries prior to this year. It would have been Thomas and Kamara, but it's definitely not Henry and Brown. Brown is nowhere near top level yet. That's a strong wide receiver comment. Key, your wide receiver perspective?
Well, I Thielen's a good player. I don't think that if Minnesota's without Thielen that the offense is going to stall because Justin Jefferson is there. Plus, I just think that when you look at it, you talk about New Orleans, it was so much when they get Thomas back. What are they going to look like when they get Thomas back? Offense looks a little bit better. He had his first 100-yard game after coming back a couple weeks ago, and he hasn't missed a beat. So I think it's Thomas and Kamara for sure, but Cook and Jefferson, not Cook and Thielen for me.
Okay. Chip 403 at Chip 403. This is interesting just based upon what you just said. I'm going A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is head and shoulders the best pure workhorse running back, which essentially sets this debate apart. To add in A.J. Brown as the tandem, you're getting an elite, underrated young wide receiver, which makes this duo the best. And I would just add there, Jay, Derrick Henry's just one of those dudes that gets stronger as the game goes on, not weaker as the game goes on.
I mean, and A.J. Brown is a beast, too. I mean, both these guys. Look, if that's Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, Aaron Jones, Davante Adams, I mean, all these guys, they're right there. I mean, you would probably say for the year Derrick Henry is having with A.J. Brown that they'll probably be number one. But then, I don't know, it's going to be hard to dislodge Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas to me. I mean, granted, Michael Thomas hasn't played every game this year. He's been battling injuries and some other things that have happened.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly other things that have happened.
Right hand injury.
But talent-wise, I think talent-wise, those are your top three.
Allegedly. But here's what I would say. I like Derrick Henry. I like the big bruiser, wear you down. But I got to take him off the field on third downs because I want to throw the ball on third and 19 or third. I got to get him out of the game and get a catching back in there. That's one of the reasons I like Alvin Kamara. He allows me to do different things, move him around the formations, as well as Aaron Jones. I can move these guys, McCaffrey. I can move them around in the passing game and don't miss a beat in the running game. If I decide to change the formation, decide to go into an empty package, a 3x2, then motion one of those guys back into the backfield and run the football, everybody knows, okay, they may run out of this set or they may throw out of this set. If I do the same thing with Derrick Henry and stay in empty, they like, it's quarterback draw. You can do more with those other backs. He's still a phenomenal back. He's a workhorse. He's a bruiser. I would love blocking for him. There's no question about it, but I just like a little more versatility with my running backs.
If you're as old school as Key and I are, and you actually want to pick up the phone and call us, that's okay too. 888-SAY-ESPN. We're not Twitter guys. 888-729-3776. Let's continue to roll through it. At Doug Seifert, thanks, Doug. Quote, the best running back in football, Nick Chubb, and the most intense and clutch wide receiver, Jarvis Landry. Jay, how about that?
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, Key always talks about the snack, crackle, pop, right, Key? You talk about that. I don't know if Jarvis Landry brings that. I know Nick Chubb does. I mean, maybe OBJ was having, if he didn't get hurt and he was having an explosive year, I can definitely see that as a tier. I still know if they belong, they're really good. I mean, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt are really good. Jarvis Landry is good. I still know if they belong in that upper echelon.
I love you trying to find those words, but that's great.
What do you mean try to find those words? Like,
instead of just saying they don't belong.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to soft the landing, that's all.
No, because I'm trying to be respectful.
You didn't say that they were
very talented.
You didn't say that
they don't belong in that upper tier conversation.
You didn't say that they were not talented. You didn't say anything like that. They are talented. But when you're talking about a duel, I don't believe that they are on the same level as the other guys, as a duel. I don't.
We had a caller.
It's not that Landry's not good. He's just not Davante Adams. You know, it's not that I wasn't good. I'm not Jerry Rice. I'm not Randy Moss. I still was good. I accept that. I did my job.
Right. Any point of comparison to Randy Moss, somebody's always finishing second.
You're going
to
talk about the goal. Yeah,
exactly.
Last thing on this particular subject, I'm going to break the spirit of the question, but I thought it was interesting because last hour we had a listener essentially say, even though this is not running back wide receiver, if you have a guy like Kyler Murray that essentially could operate, if you just blindly looked at his stats, you could be like, wow, that guy actually rushed for a lot of yards. If it was a Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, understanding this is a quarterback, not a running back, what do you think of that tandem? It's kind of a unique way to pose it because Murray can do both.
He can, but he still wouldn't be with Thomas and Kamara because he can't catch the ball out of the backfield, something that Alvin could do. He could catch the ball and he can run. Not that Kyler Murray can't, because all of a sudden Cliff Kingsbury, he just heard right. me. He's drawing it up. We're going to throw Kyler a pass now.
But if Kyler's your runner and Hopkins is your catcher, I mean, it's interesting.
It is. But how much are you willing to go to the well mm-hmm. with that quarterback running the ball like you are with a traditional running back?
Small dude, right?
It's not even necessarily small. I don't care if he was big. You don't want to have Cam Newton running the football every single play, because at some point, the little bruises to the shoulder, to mm-hmm. the elbow, it hurts. I mean, that ground is hard. That ground is not soft and is not friendly.
Field turf now, not the cement you had when you were playing.
Doesn't
down.
Matter, though. Doesn't when that thing freezes up. And I only played on AstroTurf probably 3 or 4 times outside of the old Giant Stadium, oof. And then we went to field turf.
No, that was a devastating.
So, nice try, Zubin.
Ask anybody who played at the old veterans with the Eagles how bad that played. One of the worst field services.
I forgot
in
who that was. That
Wendell Davis.
Popped both ACLs?
Blew out both knees. Think about that. Running unimpeded on a field, blowing out both knees.
Rats in the stadium and a police cell underneath the stadium.
Fly, Eagles,
thanks
fly.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Fly, Eagles, fly. We're flying to a break. On the way, the NBA's best insider is here for some huge NBA breaking news this morning surrounding the champs. That's next.
The Steelers knock off the Ravens. They remain perfect after the unusual Wednesday afternoon circumstances. What does it mean for the rest of their season? We'll talk about that and more with me, Greeny, starting noon Eastern on ESPN Radio and streaming on ESPN+.
Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Woj!
Host of the Woj podcast, where you can get your podcasts, you can get Woj. All right, I'm going to throw a skip pass. Jay, tell me if it's a finely tuned skip pass over to Key, our resident Laker fan, who is going to ask Woj our first question.
Hey, Woj, man. What's happening?
Key.
Why is,
good morning.
Good, man. Why is this even breaking news? Why is this news when the Lakers going to sign the two biggest stars in the NBA and win a championship again? Why is this news?
Well, it's because it's what I do. That's why it's news.
No, not you. Yes, not you.
What a great answer.
Not you, just
because
in
I
general.
Do it. That's why it's news, damn it.
No, not you, just in general. We was never going to lose those two.
Nope. And I think what's important about the last couple days for the Lakers is both players are locked in long term now, because Anthony Davis could have done a shorter deal. LeBron James didn't have to do an extension. He's LeBron James. This is Anthony Davis. They could go on year-to-year deals, essentially, if they wanted to. But I think for both players, getting the security of the longer-term deal, locking in the years and the money, and now for the Lakers, they'll continue to try to build around those two, bring in pieces. You know, they're not going to have the flexibility to bring in, at least through free agency, a high-level star. But they've improved themselves in this offseason. There's no question about that. Dennis Schroeder, Marc Gasol. But for Anthony Davis now, 5-year deal, I'm told, There'll be an early termination option on it after the fourth year. So he'll be under contract one more year than LeBron James. And Anthony Davis will be 32 years old potentially when he goes back in to free agency, young enough to get another massive deal, you know, assuming he stays healthy.
Why LeBron in the extension now? Why not wait for LeBron?
Yeah, it was an option to keep doing it the way he had done it, which was on shorter term deals as he re-signed in Cleveland. You saw that he did shorter deals. But I think it was locking in that $80 million plus. You know, when you get into your mid 30s and advancing, it's hard to imagine there's an injury or a scenario that the Lakers wouldn't continue to pay LeBron James. But he gets that security now. He's locked in. Certainly, I think it speaks to a player who is focused on his future in LA, that there's nowhere to go from the Lakers. And so he's got AD locked in. You know, I think AD, listen, they're, if you want to say they're co-stars right now in L.A., certainly AD is the centerpiece of L.A.'s future. Although with LeBron James, you get the feeling he's going to play as long as he wants to, that he'll be, that he could still be at a high level into his 40s. It's remarkable the way he's taking care of his body and how there's been little, if any, drop-off in his game. So, you know, the Lakers are in great position. They've got great role players around these two. And I think you've seen in history, I think with the Lakers, especially when they're bringing in like the veteran minimum players, you know, they get guys who want to win championships who might take less money or take those one-year deals to come in and be complimentary players on a team, do it in L.A., do it at Staples Center, and do it with two players in James and Anthony Davis, who've shown that they coexist for all the problems elsewhere in the league, and you see it everywhere. Star players who cannot figure out how to play together. It was as if Anthony Davis and LeBron James had been playing together forever from the moment they got together last season.
Well, let's talk about star players that didn't feel if they can play together. I mean, the John Wall, Bradley Beal situation in D.C., and then you obviously have the Russell Westbrook and James Harden situation in Houston. Massive trade. Last time I remember, though, Woj, Raphael Stone and Tommy Shepard hadn't talked for a while. Where did this come from?
They hadn't talked. They hadn't talked since prior to the draft, and that was up until yesterday afternoon. Russell Westbrook's agent, Thad Fouché with Wasserman, I'm told, got them talking, got them on the phone yesterday and helped to bridge that gap. And once those two got on the phone, they worked through the details. You knew it was going to be a one-for-one trade Wall for Westbrook. They worked out the details of that future first-round pick that's going to go to Houston, the protections on that pick. And, Jay, they had a deal done within a couple hours. It's not typical a deal of that magnitude comes together that quickly in one afternoon, but it did yesterday.
Well, do you think, does that set the precedent for a guy like Raphael Stone, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, that he couldn't get the value that he actually wanted for Russell Westbrook? Will that be the same for James Harden? Do you think he then all of a sudden now looks to find a deal for James Harden, or does he hold on to James Harden?
I think they're going to hold on to James Harden. And I think, you know, it's easier to, if you're going to trade a Supermax player, you almost have to find another Supermax player to trade him for because they make so much money. And they were able to partner up and do that. And they did get a first-round pick moving forward for him, for Westbrook certainly. And, you know, there's a gamble for both sides. And I think for both Washington and Houston, they want to keep Bradley Beal in Washington. They want to keep James Harden in Houston. And they want to continue to build around those players. But they need these point guards to come in and fit in. They need Wall to regain his all-star form. You know, I think they need Russell Westbrook, you know, to find a chemistry with Bradley Beal. I know this about Russell Westbrook right now. One thing that's bothered him has been the talk out there about him as a teammate. He takes great pride in being a great teammate, and he's heard some knocks about that. And I know it's bothered him because it's something that is important to him. And you talk to the guys who played with him in OKC in his career, and Houston, the rest of that roster, he came in and changed his game, learned to play off the ball. It didn't work out in James Harden's eyes, but I know it's important for Westbrook to come in and find a rhythm with Bradley Beal and really fit into that team. And remember, he's going back to play with his old coach from Oklahoma City, Scottie Brooks.
Well, I need a quick answer on this one. How are you? What are you hearing about the way James Harden is handling all this now? You know, CP3 got injured. Russell Westbrook had some injury issues with his hamstring during the bubble. Now you bring on a guy in John Wall who's coming off an Achilles injury. DeMarcus Cousins coming off an injury. How's he handling everything?
Well, he's not committed to wanting to stay there. The trade, I'm told, doesn't necessarily change his view of wanting to move on. But the Rockets do have something on their side. They have time. He's still got 2 years left on his deal. But listen, they've given in Houston a lot of leeway, a lot of freedom to James Harden over the last several years under previous ownership, under the new ownership. They've really built an organization around him in every way, on the court, off the court. And so they want to keep him, but they still have some selling to do there. They don't have any intention of trading him. And if they do trade him, and as you said, Jay, they're going to need a massive haul back for him. It would be a very different looking trade for James Harden than Westbrook. For Harden, they would want a great young player. They would want multiple first round picks. That's always where you're going to start as an organization when you're talking about trading a player of that magnitude. And then it's a question of whether you can get that in the marketplace.
Woj, I know we said we'll let you get out of here, but we lied to you. I want to ask you this question. Speaking of duels, do you see the Clippers duel of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard going past this season, or will there be some movement this season on those guys?
No, I think they're committed in L.A. To the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George partnership. I think the two players are committed to each other. They're going to continue to try to build around those two. I think there's certainly you've seen some changes with that roster coming into this season. Nick Batum coming in now, re-signing Reggie Jackson, bringing him back, Luke Kennard from the Pistons. And obviously Ty Lue as head coach. But they're committed there to continuing to build around these two. They want to keep them both long-term. They want to re-sign both players for the long run.
19 mm-hmm. days away from the start of the NBA's 75th season. It'll be a massive affair, year 75, especially when you take into account the year we're coming off of. Woj, thank you so much.
All right, Woj.
Thanks, Woj.
Thanks, guys.
Woj joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oil is made from natural gas, giving you unbeatable engine protection. The proof's in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. On the way from the best insider in the NBA to the best insider in the NFL about the next daunting task the Steelers are facing, and it's just 5 days away.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That the voice of Ryan Clark, indeed, adversity in 2020 is simply just a way of life. We'll get the Steelers back on Monday early evening football before we actually get to Monday night football.
I was looking for football today. I was all excited
Thursday,
for Thursday.
Right?
I'm like, oh, yeah, NFL, who plays?
Nobody.
Nobody. Was that always on the schedule, or did they move something?
Yeah, they did move a game.
They moved it, okay.
Yeah, they moved the game.
We'll feels weird one. Now, right?
Yeah, Dallas-Baltimore is supposed to be played tonight, but instead we're going to see that next Tuesday. So get ready Tuesday night football. You just heard from Ryan Clark there, the Super Bowl champion. The Steelers angling for another Lombardi. They'll take on Washington again Monday at 5 Eastern. And then on ESPN, the traditional Monday night game we've known for months, Buffalo and San Francisco. The Packers are going to be playing in front of a wide audience this weekend on CBS in the late afternoon window. They will host the Philadelphia Eagles. And speaking of Green Bay, the Packers made a very underrated signing this week. They added the wide receiver Tavon Austin. You might remember him. Excellent college player. 8th overall pick in the 2013 draft. Aaron Rodgers said he used to watch him at West Virginia. He's like, this dude is incredible. He's a huge fan of him. Why is that signing so important? Well, listen to this. And anybody that says Rodgers is crying over weapons, here's the ultimate mic drop moment for Aaron. If Rodgers throws a pass, just even looks over at Tavon Austin at any point and flicks that wrist, it would be just the second time Aaron Rodgers has thrown a pass to a first-round pick. Let that settle in for one second.
Say that again?
All right, in his illustrious career, this would just be the second time, if indeed Aaron can throw one out to Austin, it would be just the second time he has thrown a pass to a first-round pick.
Now I'm going to ask you, who was the other guy?
Corin Robinson. Do you remember Corin Robinson?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that was forever.
That was a long time ago. A long time ago.
Yeah, that was long. That had to be like, that was like Aaron Rodgers' second start or something like that.
About 13 years ago.
Turned a lot of second rounders.
He was actually
stars,
he actually was a backup.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. Aaron was a backup then. Stats Incredible brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Adam Schefter, the NFL's best insider, joined us. Adam, you always bring about great stats every time you're with us. How about your reaction to that stat?
Well, Aaron Rodgers may not have thrown passes to first-round wide receivers, and he may not have had many great wide receiver draft selections, but he's playing with the best wide receiver in the game right now in Davante Adams. So you could look at it that way. I would look at it like he gets to play with Davante Adams every Sunday, and Davante Adams is playing at a different level than just about anybody else right now, and he's consistently great. And so, yes, that is an interesting stat, no doubt about it, Zubin, and he has not thrown to a lot of first-round picks at wide receiver, but Davante Adams is on a Hall of Fame trajectory right now.
I want to ask you about the Steelers, the tight turnaround, everything that went on yesterday in that win against the Ravens, then having to play the Washington football team on Monday in another sort of tight turnaround as the Steelers continue a season of adversity, trying to navigate it as best as they can. What's going on inside the organization, realizing they got the win over Baltimore, playing a team with an outbreak, and then here we go with another abnormal start time on Monday?
Well, it's no different than a team that plays on a Sunday and then has to go get ready for a Thursday night game. That's the same exact timeline that a team goes through on a weekly basis. The Steelers have played before on Thursdays and have had to turn it around from Sunday to a Thursday, and now they have to turn it around from a Wednesday to a Monday. Same amount of days, same amount of time. So it's no different. They've had this challenge before. They'll deal with it. The bigger challenge now will be having to overcome the loss of Bud Dupree, who suffered a significant knee injury yesterday, season ending. And so you're looking at Devin Bush already having suffered a torn ACL, being out for the year. Bud Dupree now having a knee injury that's going to sideline him for the remainder of this year. No Bush, no Dupree. Great defense still, but two great players suddenly removed from that unit.
Shefty, I know you said it's no different, but I think what would be different about it, you know you're going to play the upcoming schedule. Don't you think it would be challenging not knowing, are we going to play tomorrow? Is it going to be the next game? I know the time-wise is still the same, but I think just the not knowing of when that game is going to be had to prove to be the challenging part, correct?
Well, you know what's interesting about that, Jay, is that yesterday the Steelers had a game day positive or a game day situation where Marquise Pouncey was placed on the reserve COVID list. Now, the last team that had something like that was the Baltimore Ravens with Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins. Mm. And the virus spread within the organization to the point where that organization had 10 straight days of positive tests, which necessitated moving that game three different times to finally being played 7 days after it was supposed to on Thanksgiving night. And so what you're hoping for now, if you're Pittsburgh, yes, the Steelers are scheduled to play on Monday against the Washington football team. But what you're hoping is that it's a clean week, that there's no positive tests, that it doesn't spread the way that it did in Baltimore. And I think there are some concerns. I spoke to some people who are like, watch this. Just watch this in Pittsburgh. Because now that Pouncey was placed on the reserve COVID list on game day, they're going to have to be leery of other players also falling into that same category. So we'll watch here in the coming days. And we know where we're at with the National Football League, with this country, cases spiking, daily updates. It seems like every day in the NFL, another player is placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. And so I think the Pittsburgh Steelers bear watching this week as much as anybody.
Adam, you've obviously been following the Ravens story from beginning to end. So why were they so frustrated at the end of that game yesterday?
Frustrated in what sense, Kate? What do you mean?
It seemed as though that they were very frustrated about not only the outcome, about how they were treated, treated by the NFL in terms of having to play the game.
Well, I think that it seemed like during the course of the game they were frustrated by some calls that went on during the game. Maybe that contributed. I don't know when you're referencing they were frustrated exactly. Is that in-game? Is that out of the game?
Post.
Post-game. Well, the only thing I could say there is that they played without a lot of their regular players. They felt like a postponement should have been in the cards. There were so many starts and stops and twists and turns. I don't know why they were frustrated in general with the league yesterday, other than my guess would be, as I think about it, the league itself said it was okay to go back into the building last week on Monday and Tuesday. The league gave the Ravens the clear at that point in time. And it was not clear because the organization had 10 straight days of people testing positive. And so I'm just guessing because I don't know this. But if they're going to look back at the events of the past week, on Monday and Tuesday, the NFL signed off on the Ravens going back to work. And they went back to work and it wasn't contained. And they went back to work that Monday and Tuesday because the league wanted to play the game that Thursday night of Thanksgiving when it quickly became apparent a couple days later that they couldn't do that. So, look, if you've got 10 straight days of this and you've got 30 members of the organization, then clearly mistakes were made along the way. But this is also a learning experience for everybody. You know, nobody's been through anything like this before, and nobody's going to be perfect either.
That's a great point. That's exactly what Harbaugh said after the game as well. That's Adam Schefter, the NFL's best insider. On the way, the big breaking news from the NBA and why nobody can now catch the Lakers.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.